everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Wharton Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on sex and reproduction when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something must be wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. And this is a very radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? And that's why I contend that the solution to this national moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked in the past. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is in order to suffer the effects from it. So whether you call it the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or the Common Law or Natural Law or Karma or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about sex and reproduction, and I mentioned earlier that we Americans ought to be the most sexually satisfied people on the face of the earth. We've got sex in our education, we've got sex on television, we've got sex in our movies, we've got writers who write Kinsey reports, and we've just got sex, sex, sex everywhere. But when you take a look at the final analysis where the rubber meets the road, we have a divorce rate of 67%, and that's up from 8 divorces per 100,000 marriages in 1900 to 67 divorces out of every 100 marriages today. I don't think that that's sexual satisfaction, because when you look at the divorce petitions, you find the most common grounds for divorce is sexual incompatibility. Now, my God, if you know, we're the most educated, sexually conscious nation on the face of the world, or face of the earth, why in the world are we having so much sexual incompatibility that causes so much divorce? Well, in the Bible, a lot is said about sex and reproduction. And it's the exact opposite from what we get from Hollywood and the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto and the evolutionary philosophies that are being promoted today as being science and scientific. The Bible has a little different perspective because it's written from the perspective of the guy that designed and created sex. Kind of like the guy that designs and creates a 747 is probably in a better position to tell you how to use it than is the pilot who's going to fly it, or who has never flown it yet but is trying to learn how to fly it. When we buy an automobile, we're very careful to go to the handbook. The Ford Motor Company puts a owner's manual into the jockey box, and so we look at the owner's manual to find out how often should we change the oil, what kind of oil should we put into the transmission, how should we use this automobile. We don't do that with our bodies. We don't do that with human relations. But it would seem logical to me, for instance, women, when they're going to have a baby, go to a pediatrician, a paid professional. Pediatricians, by and large, are men who have never had babies. These men who have never had babies go to college, and they're educated in babies. And then they come out and they advise women who have never had babies on how to have babies. Somehow that doesn't add up to me. Being an old country boy, it would seem like to me that if you wanted to have a baby, you would go to some old lady who has had 5, 6, or 7 babies, like my Grandma Gordon, and you'd say, "Now, Grandma Gordon, could you instruct me as to what I ought to do in having a baby?" It would seem like to me that some old hand that was experienced and had 7 babies would be a better instructor than a male doctor who has never had a baby and only went to college and got secondhand hearsay information about how to have a baby. It would seem like to me, then, that sex and sexual activities would be better advised for you ladies out there if you went to your grandmothers and you said, "Grandma, could you tell me what it is about sex that I ought to know as a young woman, 18, 20 years old, about to get married? Could you instruct me? Could you tell me?" Well, in the Bible, in this little book that I said today I was going to cover for you, is called Song of Solomon. And there's a young woman here who is narrating the book. And she goes to her mother to get instruction. Well, it's a wild, off-the-wall concept. Most people get their sexual education in America from public school. And I've read to you a number of passages out of the sex education manual that they're teaching in the public school, teaching 14-year-old girls that they ought to be sexually compliant and that they ought to perform sexual favors for boys, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-old boys, long before marriage. But in the Bible, I pointed this out to you, there's no such thing on planet Earth, no such thing on this planet as sexual relations outside of marriage. And we've covered the penalties that go with it and so on. So now let's look at the positive side and say, well, how is it that these old ladies knew what a woman's duty in marriage was, knew how to keep their men at home, knew how to keep them out of the whorehouses and out of the brass rail bar? My Aunt Bessie could do it. My granny could do it. My Aunt Edith could do it. And if you'll think back, I'll bet you can think back to your grannies and so on back. And, yeah, there was something that these people knew about sex and reproduction that we evidently don't know today because, you know, women today are mystified. They sing these country western songs, you know. They'll say, "Oh, I'm just so sad and blue because my man has left me for another," you know, so on. And they don't get a clue as to what it is that they're doing wrong, that their husbands are out here and they're casting eyes, you know, at the stewardesses and at the girls in the office and so on. But the old ladies seem to know. Now, back about 1900, just to go back 100 years, about 1900, women were the matriarchs of their homes. And these matriarchs of their homes kind of reminded me of Phyllis Schlafly. And this Phyllis Schlafly back in the 1970s was opposed to the Equal Rights Amendment. And this Equal Rights Amendment was designed, of course, by men to give women equal rights with men. Phyllis Schlafly said that she was not interested in equal rights with men because she already enjoyed superiority. And she was exactly correct. You see, in the Bible, God has ordained by law certain customs that we follow. For instance, women are not compelled to work to support their families. Women are not compelled to go into the military to defend their homes. And women are not responsible for their debts. And she pointed that out, and she said, "Listen, I've already got superiority over men. Furthermore, I can remember when I was a kid that women, when they walked into the room, the men took their hats off." And you ever seen a man take his hat off when a woman comes into the room? Men do not take their hats off when another man comes into the room. And they don't take their hats off when another woman comes into the room because they have equality. But there was a time when women were superior to men that when a woman walked into the room, the men took their hats off. Now, today, when women go into a restaurant or a public building or a public cafeteria and they sit down at the table, no man pulls the chair out for a woman to be seated. A woman pulls her chair out and she sits down just like the men. You never see a man pulling a chair out for his friend Bob. Bob pulls his chair out and he seats himself. Joe pulls his chair out, seats himself. You do the same, and so does that woman. But there was a time when a woman walked up to the table, her escort would seat her. When a child came into the room, or when a woman came into the room, the children would all stand up. Today, the children not only don't stand up, they say, "Hey, Ma, bring me something from the refrigerator." They don't even say, "Yes, Mother," or "No, Mother," or "Yes, Ma'am," or "No, Ma'am." They say, "Hey, you." So there's been quite a change in the status of women here in America during my lifetime. Phyllis Schlafly surprised me when she said, "I'm not interested in equality. I already possess superiority." Women, from the biblical point of view, are superior to men in a number of areas. Not in every area, but in a number of areas. They are not superior to men in military prowess. If you take a look at male and female anatomy, you'll see that men are built bigger than women. Bulls are bigger than cows. That's typical. God designed it that way. So when it comes to work, the brute beast, the man, goes out into the field and works, and the female, the woman, the superior, stays in the house, maintains the home, which is the base of operations. She had a parlor, and in the parlor, no man set foot without her permission. When a man came into the house, he would take his shoes off, and he would wash up on the back porch. When a woman came into the house, she didn't take her shoes off, and she washed up in a bowl in the bathroom. Or if they didn't have a bathroom in the house, in a bedroom. Women clearly, in America, had superiority over men in their sphere of influence, which was the home. Something radical has occurred. Something radical has changed. And the same thing is true with sex and reproduction. Women are the naturals for marriage, child rearing, child education, and sex and sexual relations. Sexual relations is a woman thing. Childbearing is a woman thing. The matriarch of the home is a woman thing. Shoeing the horses is a man thing. Cutting down trees is a man thing. Building a race car engine is a man thing. There are certain things that are man things and certain things that are women things. And we used to have a clear line of distinction, at least in this country, and I suspect in Anglo-Saxon administration around the world. And it came from the Bible. In the olden days, we used to get our instruction from the Bible. And if we take a look at Proverbs chapter 31, we'll see what a Proverbs 31 wife is all about. Here's a woman that is not just equal with men. She is clearly superior. She's superior to her husband in these areas. Listen to this. "Who can find a virtuous woman? Because her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil." He doesn't have to go to Flo's whorehouse. He doesn't have to show that he's a man by laying the stewardess on the trip to South Africa. "She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands." So she's hardworking. "She does her husband good, and she looks after his needs." And I want to emphasize, she looks after his needs. And one of a man's needs is his sexual needs. And if a female is looking after her husband's sexual needs, then he does not have a need for the girls down at the office. And a wise woman who pays attention to her husband's sexual needs keeps her husband sexually satisfied, and he doesn't have a wandering eye. Women today don't have a clue as to what their husband's sexual needs are. "She is like the merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night and gives meat to her household and a portion to her maidens." This woman gets up in the morning and goes to work. She has employees. Now, you know, today women want to be equal with men. They want to get a job at IBM or Microsoft. This woman's not looking for a job. She's self-employed. This woman is an Oprah Winfrey. She owns her own television stations, and she owns her own television show. She's not working for CBS. She's not getting a paycheck. She owns the company. She considers a field and she buys it. This woman is a businesswoman. This woman buys, sells, and trades. And with the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard. She girds her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her candle goes not out by night. She lays her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretches out her hand to the poor, and yea, she reaches forth her hands to the needy. This woman is financially independent. She gives money to the poor. She's not sitting here with her hand out to her husband, "Well, please give me some money to buy groceries for the little kids." This woman is not being dominated by her husband. You know, there's a big difference here between the way we live life today in America, as pictured, you know, by Hollywood and public schools and evolutionary philosophy, and what we see in the Bible. You see, in the Bible, if you take a look at property and property rights, we practice in the Scripture strict property rights. That means a woman owns her own property. This woman owns her own property independent of her husband. These people aren't practicing communism. This woman isn't a practicing communist, practicing community property. Hell, she owns her own. Goes on, she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. She has plenty of clothes. She makes herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. This woman is dressed very well. She dresses in purple, and her clothes are made of silk. How many of you women out there have silk clothes? Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes fine linen and sells it and delivers girdles to the merchants. This woman is a businesswoman. She buys and sells land. She's running a manufacturing plant. She's got employees. This is a whole lot closer to Oprah Winfrey than working at CBS as a reporter, don't you think? Now, strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looks well to the ways of her household. She is the matriarch of her home. She eats not the bread of idleness. She's not a lazy woman. She's up and at it, and she's a hustler. Her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but you excel them all. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the Eternal, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. Now, I've got a wife like that. She owns real estate. She buys and sells and trades real estate. She has employees. She has a business. She's a saleswoman. She has her own money, her own estate. We work together as partners. I have mine. She has hers. I'm sexually satisfied. I'm not casting about looking for some young woman over here. In fact, in all of history, to show you how vulnerable men are to sex, and sex is a great attraction to men. I mentioned that to you earlier. Only Joseph in the Bible, only one case in all of history where a woman cast her net and said, "Come into the bedchamber," and the man said, "No, I won't do it." Joseph in Egypt. It's the only man I ever heard of. Now, there's probably others, but they're rare. That's the point. And as I showed you in Proverbs 5 and 7, the strange woman sets her snare. The strange woman sets up the bedchamber. The strange woman, you know, the girls down at the office, the girls on the airliner, they set their nets to catch the airline pilot, to catch the executive at the bank, to catch the boss at the office. And they almost always fall into the trap. Now, my Aunt Bessie kept my Uncle Otto at home, and my Aunt Edith kept Uncle Buster at home, and my grandma kept my granddad at home. Now, how did those women do that? How did they do that? It's because the old women knew and they had been instructed in how to keep their husbands sexually satisfied. There is no sexual satisfaction, or virtually none, in America today. How do I know that? The divorce rate, 67%. The biggest single issue is sexual incompatibility. You've got all this knowledge about sex, and you're just ignorant. You really don't understand. You don't know how this product is used. Women today go to pediatricians. I mentioned this at the beginning of the program. They go to pediatricians to learn how to have a baby. It's crazy on its face. You should be going to your grandmother. You shouldn't be going to a Dr. Kinsey, who was a sodomite, to learn about sex and sexual relations. You should be going to your grandmother, ladies. Boys, you should be going to your granddad. Now, I was instructed in sex by my granddad. Here's what he told me. He said, "Son, you never approach unto a woman until she's ready." Well, you know, an old-timey farmer, my granddad was in the cattle business, and you know, when we look out here in nature, no bull approaches unto the cow until she's ready. No lion ever attempts to breed a lioness until she's ready. In fact, lions are notorious for this. The female, if she's not ready, she'll roll over on her back, and she will rip open a male lion's stomach and kill him if she's not ready. So one of the first rules that we were taught as young boys growing up is that in sexual relations, and we're talking about husbands and wives now, we're not talking about the girl down the street or some floozy on a bar stool at the Brass Rail. We're talking about wives. Never approach your wife until she's ready. In fact, in the Bible, we find exactly the opposite. The man does not approach the woman approaches the man. Let me show you that. A fellow by the name of Jacob, we know our great-great-great-granddaddy Jacob, back in Genesis chapter 29. Let's take a look at this, because in Genesis 29, Jacob wanted to marry a young woman. And he saw this young woman, who was the daughter of Laban. And Laban said, this is Genesis 29, verse 15. "And Laban said unto Jacob, because you are my brother, should you therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" What do you want, Jake? Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful, and she was well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel. I mean, she was just an Elizabeth Taylor. He just looked at her and he said, "God, I don't know, that's the woman I want." And he said, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." And Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than I should give her to some other man. Abide with me." Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Now, here's a guy who worked. I know this is kind of peculiar to most of you people. Here's a guy who worked 7 years for this girl. He's going to buy this girl. Now, today, you know, we look at this as kind of quaint and archaic, and, you know, this isn't modern and up-to-date. It's not equal, but it's called patriarchal family. I mentioned that to you earlier. Three types of marriage: common law, patriarchal, or civil. So you can have a civil marriage, you can have a common law marriage, you can have a patriarchal marriage. This is a patriarchal marriage in which Jacob is going to work 7 years for this girl. Now, let's give Jacob $5.15 an hour, shall we? $5.15. There's 2,000 working hours in a year, times 2,000. And then let's go times 7 years, and that's $72,100. Let me ask you, boys, what did you pay for your wife? Ladies, how much did your husband pay you in a bride price? And if the answer was nothing, then you should not be surprised that your husband treats you like dirt, because you're worth just exactly what he paid for you. Nothing. And he values you at nothing. Now, the other day, a racehorse broke his leg on the field, on the racetrack, and he's valued at $50 million. They're just working night and day to save that racehorse for breeding purposes for the future. That horse is worth $50 million. Ladies, how many of you out there have a husband that would pay $50 million for you? You know, you can sit there and you can say rhetorically, "Well, my husband loves me and my husband would pay $50 million. Well, how much did he actually pay for you? Well, he paid nothing. Okay, that tells you a lot right there. Now, the other day, I've got an 18-year-old virgin daughter. And this girl is trained at the hands of her mother. She is trained in cooking and sewing and quilting, and she is trained in business and business administration. She's an heiress. She's a virgin. There's a lot going for her. And I mentioned the other day that I wanted $100,000 for her bride price, which will then be converted to her dowry. And when she goes out with her husband, she'll walk out of here with $100,000 that her husband paid for her. And I think she's worth $100,000. And some guy here, one of my hired hands, he said, that's preposterous. That's outrageous. As if my hired man's going to marry my daughter. You know, it may be outrageous to the hired man, but let me assure you that nobody's going to waltz in here and bed my daughter down in the back of his Chevy van, free. And in the Bible, you don't see some guy coming in here and bedding down the girls. We get that out of Hollywood. We get that on the television. We get oral sex out of the television set. But that isn't something that comes out of the scripture. That isn't the design mechanism engineered into this process of sex and reproduction by God, your creator. The proper process over here is that women are chattel. Women are bought. Women have a bride price. Women have a price. Women are valued above rubies, for crying out loud. Diamonds, boys and girls, are like pig tracks. They're very common. Rubies are rarer than diamonds. It's De Beers that has deceived you into believing that diamonds are a girl's best friend. It's preposterous. Preposterous. Or that paper gold, you know, that's an oxymoron. Paper gold. What are you talking about? Paper gold. Gold is gold. Paper is paper. Paper is intrinsically valueless, and gold has great value to it. It's all a matter of how you've been taught and trained from the time you're a little child up. You know, Pope Leo, back in about the 11th century, said, you give me a kid until he's a child, until he's 7 years old, he'll be a Catholic for life. Public school's the same thing. You send a child to public school, and he will be a communist for life. There's a few exceptions, but they're rare. Now, Phyllis Schlafly knew and understood woman's superiority in her realm. And people that practice polygamy know and understand the grand dame of the home. And that the home is the bailiwick of a female, not a male. And then I said I'd show you that. So let's take a look here in Genesis chapter 30, verse 16. I'm trying to find 30. Flip the page here to verse 16. Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in unto me, for surely I have hired you with my son's mandrakes, and he laid with her that night. So Jacob comes in out of the field. Leah is ready for sex. Leah meets him coming in from the field, and she says, I'm ready. The bedchamber is ready. Listen, boys and girls, Leah did not invite her husband Jacob into her home to play Scrabble. She invited her husband into her home for sexual relations. She made ready the bedchamber. Now, if you want to know why it is that a whorehouse has so much appeal to men, ladies, let me describe it. When you go into a whorehouse, you walk into a big, kind of like a living room, but it's going to be a big room, and around the room are a number of chairs, and there are all these beautiful women sitting in all these chairs. All of these women are dressed in negligees. They're dressed for sex. They look like $1 million. These women are not dressed for the office. They're not dressed for hiking or fishing or camping. They're dressed for sex. They're dressed for the bedroom. How many women dress for the bedroom and send a signal to their husbands? Tonight's the night, we're ready. Or this is the time, I'm ready. Well, the old women knew that. And the old women knew and understood male anatomy. So let me describe male anatomy for you here for a second. Males, according to Jerry Spence, have been cursed with the curse of testosterone. And he makes a pretty eloquent case for the curse of testosterone in his book, With Justice for None. Pretty funny guy. He's an old man. And he's been around the block a few times. He knows what the whorehouse is for and how to use it. And he knows why men go to the whorehouse. Now, women don't know. Women, are confused. They say, I don't understand why my husband has got eyes for all these other women, why he's not faithful to me. And it's because women get their sexual education from high school, television, and the movies. They don't get it from the Bible. Women who get their sexual education from the Bible know and understand a woman's duty of marriage. And a woman's duty of marriage is to keep her husband sexually satisfied. And that's because men are driven like a heroin addict. He has one consuming fear, and that is he's going to run out of heroin. And a man has one all-consuming fear. He's going to run out of sex. Because he's driven by this chemical in his body called testosterone. And when the semen builds up in his testicles, the testosterone flows, and he needs relief. And a wise woman gives it to him. Whereas the barroom floozy says, I'm equal with you, and you can just go take a cold shower. Boys and girls, let me tell you, men don't go and take cold showers. It doesn't do anything to alleviate the semen level, and it does absolutely nothing for the testosterone level. So the professional sex worker knows that. And so she opens a business like Heidi Fleischman, a madam. And she says, I know what men want. I know what men need. I know male anatomy. And she opens up and she puts the most beautiful women that money can buy, the most beautiful women she can find, women that want to make money. And she puts them into this big room called Mustang Ranch or Flo's Whorehouse or wherever you're going. And the man walks in and he looks around the room just like Jacob did. And he cast his eyes upon Rachel. He says, oh, my God, here's the testosterone working. He says, I will work 7 years for that woman. And he did. He paid $72,100 at minimum wage, for crying out loud. $72,100 for that woman. Ladies, let me tell you, when your husband pays $72,000 for you, he will treat you like a favored, prized racehorse. If you want to be treated like a princess, then you need to behave like a princess, not a barstool floozy. Hang on. I give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. And it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, if you've got your pencil sharpened, flip over here to Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon, it's between Ecclesiastes and Isaiah, just 8 little short chapters. Remember that this is written by the hand of old King Solomon, a man. King Solomon had 1,000 wives. But Solomon was the scribe. Solomon was the guy that wrote the words down. These are not Solomon's words. These are not Solomon's ideas. Now, I'm looking here in my office, and I'm looking up on a shelf in which there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 3-inch binders. There's about 500 to 800 pages in each one of those binders. I wrote all those books. Wrote them all. And yet, they're set in type, and when I wrote them in longhand, my wife took them, and she corrected and punctuated, and she changed it. And when you get all through with it, and you read these books, you know, like the Mosaic Law Code here is a book that I wrote, and so on. These are my words, but they've been edited. Now, Solomon was a scribe. Solomon was a writer. Solomon was an educated man. But the Song of Solomon, the little book in the Ecclesiastes and Proverbs, these books that Solomon wrote, are actually written by God Almighty, who inspired Solomon to write these words down. So, all scripture is given by inspiration of God. And Solomon was one of 26 writers who wrote this down. The thing that makes this book so unique, out of 66 books in the Bible, this book is unique in that these are not Solomon's words or thoughts. In fact, it's the narration of one of Solomon's wives, probably, as Haley's Bible Handbook says, the girl is the virgin who ministered to David in his last days that we read about in 1 Kings 1, chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. She says that she's black here in verse 5. I am black but comely, O you daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon. But verse 6 tells us that this woman's not a Negro woman. She's not a black race woman. Look not upon me because I am black, because the sun has looked upon me. She's black, or she's dark-skinned, because she's been working out in the sun in her vineyard. This is a Proverbs 31 wife. And this woman is narrating these eight chapters, and this book is aimed at the bedchamber. It's aimed at Solomon. And she is inducing Solomon to come into her bedchamber. Actually, her bedchamber is Solomon's bedchamber. You know, married people have a bedroom. You know, I've got a bedroom. It's our bedchamber. But I don't prepare the bedchamber for sexual relations with my wife. My wife does that. And that's because sex is a woman thing. And remember, boys, you don't move on the woman. The woman will let you know when she's ready. And yet, there's a balance here, because the man, like a bull in the field, is always ready for sex. But you never approach to the woman until the woman is ready. And yet, that woman has to keep you sexually satisfied. And Song of Solomon is the story of a woman who is keeping her man, Solomon, sexually satisfied. Now, this guy Solomon has 1,000 wives, and he's a polygamist. Now, most people today look upon polygamy as being something that's sexual. Polygamy is a business. Marriage, boys and girls, is first and foremost a business. Sex is the frosting that comes on the cake. Years ago, I had a man from Salt Lake City. I won't mention his name because I don't want to embarrass him or anybody else or any of his family. He's a very large family. But he came up to school. He had a problem with his trucking company down Page, Arizona. And he came up and we discussed his trucking problem. He had 15 sons. Now, I don't know how many daughters he had, but you know the law of averages says if he had 15 sons, he had 15 daughters. He had five wives. And his first wife, Agnes, was with him when he came up to Salt Lake City. So he came up with a wife. He's got four more at home. Each one of these wives lives in a home. Each one of these wives is the matriarch of her own home. This woman, Agnes, had five sons. So out of the 15 sons, this woman, like Leah, has more than the other wives in sons. And his youngest son runs the trucking company in Page, Arizona. His oldest son was running the Murray, Utah Sand and Gravel Company. I mean, this guy is the patriarch of 15 businesses, and he's got five wives. He's got 15 sons. This is a business. This is a vertically integrated polygamous business. In secular law, we call it a vertically integrated corporation, which is why the state outlawed polygamy. And that's because polygamy competes with corporations. And this is corporate America, not polygamous America. The God-ordained business model is polygamy. The civil law state, satanic business model is corporations, IBM, General Motors. So here in this book called Song of Solomon, here is a female, a wife of Solomon, who is a matriarch of her own home. She is inviting Solomon into her bedchamber. It's one of Solomon's wives. He, in theory, probably had a number of wives with homes that he went to from time to time. He was invited there. And this woman in this chapter is inviting him in. She receives instruction from her mother. She's very sexually adept. She's a very knowledgeable woman. She knows what a man's needs are. She understands the testosterone level, and she caters to that. And as a result of that, she's a very valuable woman. Her price is far above rubies. Let me tell you, boys and girls, my wife is a very valuable woman. Makes a lot of money. Very smart and intelligent woman. She's known as Miss Jackie here. And in my local community, I am well received by everybody. I'm dressed well. She insists that I dress well. She insists that there are certain standards that we maintain and meet in our home and in our business lives. And as a matter of fact, boys, now listen to this. Now this is a scientific fact. You'll relate to this. Women are smarter than men. Did you know that? You see, intellectually, women, I don't know why God has designed it this way, but women naturally gravitate to language such as English. My wife is a whiz, a genius at English. When I write something, she scrunches up her face and she says, "Oh my God." And then she goes to work and she starts editing this. And she takes out the double negatives and she puts in the punctuation. And you know, I can write. I've just told you, I've got 15 books up here that I can look at right here on the wall that I've written. And I'm a pretty prodigious writer. But I'm really not good, you know, at grammar and English. And my wife is a whiz at Scrabble. I don't even play. There's no point. You know, if I sat down to play Scrabble with my wife, I've got an 18-year-old daughter. You know, I'm just wasting my time. There isn't any competition. I mean, I could sit there and play with them and see if I could come up with a word or two in the game. But when it comes to playing intellectual games, you know, women typically have it over men. And you see that today in American society, you'll find that there are fewer men now in college than there are women. Women have now taken over academics. They want to be equal. They don't want to be superior, but they want to be equal with men. Oh, I don't know. My Aunt Bessie was superior to my Uncle Otto. My grandmother was superior to my granddad. In the Bible, in the patriarchal family, the woman in her sphere, in her home, I'm not saying out in the field and out with the cattle and up in the woods. I'm just saying that women, when it comes to sex, reproduction, childbearing, home, parlors, those are the matriarchs. They're called the grand dames of the home. Patriarchal families, polygamous families, practice that social status. In 1900, we practiced that in America and Great Britain and Australia. And when a woman came in the room, the men stood up and took their hats off. A clear sign of subservience to a master who has walked into the room. We don't do that anymore. We don't need to. Women are not superior to us anymore, fellas. They are only equal to us now. Furthermore, women have attempted to take on men on their strong points. Women now want to compete with men in the military. Girls, you cannot compete with men in the military. They're bigger than you. They're stronger than you. They're tougher than you. Women need to dominate men in their strong points, not in their weak points. Women are weaker vessels. They're described as such in the scripture. A weaker vessel needs to be wise. Wise as a serpent, harmless as a dove. You don't go out here and try to compete with some 6'4", 240-pound linebacker and say, gee, I want to play football with the Dallas Cowboys girls. You know, if a woman got out there on the football field, she'd get killed. You don't have the physical stamina. You don't have the size, the bulk to do that. Stay off the football field. You want to stay in the realm where you're the mistress, where you are the master. And that's the bedroom. There is no competition in there for you ladies. And there is no man that can tell you no. And there's only one recorded case in all of history where a man told a woman no. Now, my Aunt Bessie wasn't the greatest looker in the world. She's a nice lady. Nice lady. She's a good-looking woman. I mean, I don't mean she was ugly, but, you know, she could never get a job at Mustang Ranch. She could never have been a whore because she didn't have the looks for it. And she wasn't. But she was totally dominant over my Uncle Otto in the bedroom, as evidenced by the fact that Uncle Otto never strayed. And I'm going to tell you something else. A man walks out the door of his house, and he hasn't been relieved of his semen. And he goes to the office, and he is now suffering from testosterone strain, and he's overloaded with semen, and milling around in the office are these young women. I mean, this is a guy 40, 50 years old, and here are these 23, 25, 30-year-old women mincing around in the office. These women in the office are wearing very tight clothes, low-cut blouses to show off their breasts. Ladies, listen up. Breasts are described in the Bible as something that is something that you use to draw your man into the bedroom. Oral sex in the form of kissing is something that you use to arouse your husband to the sex act. It isn't something that you portray or that you demonstrate on television. And so here's your husband. He's in the office, and here's all of these girls walking around like a bunch of whores in Mustang Ranch. And they're all giving him the eye, and they're all flirting with him. And women, you know, when you give your men the signal, I mean, when a woman gives a man the signal, it says, come on. Come on. I'm ready. And most women in America dress like they're ready for sex at the drop of a hat. You can see them walking down the street. I mean, they swing their ass, you know, like they're in a swing. And, you know, that's a come on to every man. So if you're getting raped, you know, when you look at the rape rates in America, and then you ask rapists, why did you do it? They almost always invariably say, she was asking for it, she was asking for it, she was asking for it. They don't have a rape problem in Saudi Arabia. Women in Saudi Arabia wear masks over their face. They cover themselves from head to foot. There isn't anything inside that black robe that you could even vaguely describe as a come-on, boys. And as a result of that, there's no rape in Arabia. Now, you go into a whorehouse and take a look at how those girls are dressed. Those girls could walk out on the streets of America, and nobody would notice. You'd think, well, that's just the normal style of the day. Wearing a negligee, walking down the street, swinging your ass with your breasts hanging out. That's the way movie stars go to world premieres, isn't it? Dressed like Solomon's wife, ready for the bedchamber, or like Leah coming to her husband and saying, okay, the bedchamber's ready, and we're going to go in and play Scrabble now. I mean, come on, kids. You know, there's reason, there's logic, and there's common sense, you know, and if we use reason, logic, and common sense, and we couple that with the scripture, you know, it tells us quite a little story. This thing of French kissing, you know, is for the express purpose of sexual arousal, girls. It isn't something that you use casually out on the street, or that you use casually. You teach your children from the time they're about 2 years old to sit in front of the boob tube and watch oral sex on television. Well, how do you think those girls and boys are going to behave when they get to be big girls and boys? And when those boys have testosterone running around through their veins and those little girls, they have estrogen running around through their veins, how do you think they're going to behave? They're not going to behave like Saudi Arabian women. Now, you know, you can sit there and say, well, I don't want to be one of them Saudi women, you know, that's oppressed. Well, that's true. They ought not to oppress their women, and they certainly do. But there's no oppression going on here in the Bible. Oppression, boys and girls, is something that comes out of religion. It doesn't come out of the Bible. It isn't the design mechanism that you got from your Creator. In fact, when you look at Proverbs 31, you're looking at superiority. You're not looking at an oppressed woman there. My wife isn't oppressed. My wife is financially successful, and she's financially independent. And when I die, other than the inconvenience for about a week or 10 days of disposing of the body and getting the system back up and running again, she's never going to miss a beat. There isn't going to be any escrow. There isn't going to be any probate. There isn't going to be any reading of the will. There isn't going to be any inheritance tax. My wife is well taken care of and very knowledgeable in law and very knowledgeable in business and very competent woman. And then I'm not running around chasing after the secretaries at the office. And she has no fear that I'm going to run off with one of the secretaries or bed down with one of the stewardesses. No, none at all. And I don't have any concern at all about my wife. She knows and understands all of the laws concerning sex, reproduction, and marriage. She understands male anatomy and female anatomy. She is well-versed and well-educated. And there's no problem. It's from ignorance. When you're listening to this country western song and this woman or this man is singing about her lover who's run off with somebody else, they didn't understand thou shalt not commit adultery. They didn't know about that. So in 1900, women were actually, socially, and sexually superior to men. In the year 2006, women are equal with men, not superior. Phyllis Schlafly knew and understood that, and that's why she was opposed to the Equal Rights Amendment. Women today, they don't have that grasp. The sexual duty of a woman is to keep her husband empty when he walks out the door. Ladies, don't let your husband walk out the door with testosterone or semen. If you do, you're just asking for trouble. And the last thing you're going to do, if you've got any wits about you at all, is to tell your husband to go take a cold shower. A woman in the know takes care of her husband's needs like a geisha takes care of a Japanese husband's needs, like a whore takes care of your husband's needs when you don't. Now, if a strange woman that God mentions here in Proverbs 5 and 7, the strange woman can set out the bedchamber and lure your husband away from you, ladies with a little education, couldn't you set out your bedchamber and lure your husband into your bedchamber? Now, women are pretty concerned about their looks. Let me share something with you, ladies. Your looks has absolutely nothing to do with sex. Nothing. Zero. A husband is attracted to a wife because of her duty to her husband and his sexual needs. And if you can fulfill that, like a drug dealer supplying heroin to an addict, he'll stick closer to you than two monkeys in a rainstorm. Now, let me tell you from the lips and experience of an old man. That's the way that game is played. That's the way that game works. Now, if your husband is looking at other women, it's because you're not taking care of him. It's because you're sexually incompatible. That's the problem. And yet, probably end in divorce. The little book here called Song of Solomon is written for women. This is a woman writing to women. It is your Creator, ladies, writing through the mouth of a woman by the pen of Solomon. But it's a woman telling you women, this is what you do if you want to attract your husband. This is not for attracting men. This is not for attracting some date. This isn't for attracting some John. This is for attracting your husband. The only guy that you should be having sexual relations with, your husband. This is the way you do it. Now read this little 8, 8-chapter book from that perspective, paying attention in here to certain key lines, such as in chapter 3, verse 5, "I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up nor awake my love until he please." This guy has just had an ejaculation. This guy has just had his sexual relations with his wife. And she says, don't wake him up until he please. This is an instruction to you, ladies. You know, when men have sex, their only thought is, I want to go to sleep. I want to roll over. I'm tired. Sex for a man is like walking 5 miles. This guy's tired. And that phrase is mentioned in this book 5 times. 5 times. And these little phrases that you're going to see in here, this isn't written for men. So you guys, you know, if you've been reading this and you didn't understand it, that's understandable. You ought to read it and understand it, because this is written for a woman, by a woman, by your Creator, to instruct women. Here's how you keep your man at home. My Aunt Bessie could do it. My Aunt Edith could do it. My grandmother could do it. And my wife can do it. And you can too, but you need a little instruction. You need a little understanding. And so this series that I went through this week here, talking about sex and reproduction from the biblical point of view, is a wild, off-the-wall concept, isn't it? You mean a man ought to buy and pay for his wife? You bet. Yeah. Yeah, ladies, your husband should buy and pay for you. Then you've got some value. And if you were shelling out to him before you were married and he got it free, there's an old adage, you know, among men that says, why marry the cow? Why buy the cow when you get the milk free? Ladies, ladies, sex workers don't give it out free. Men pay for it, and they gladly pay for it. Wives don't give it out free. That's why you have husbands. Husbands work hard to support their wives and their families and to provide a standard of living. If you provide your end of it, your sexual duty of a wife, that guy will stick to you like flies on stink. You won't be able to shake that guy loose. But you need some instruction, and typically the instruction in the olden days used to come from your grandmother or your great-grandmother or your mother, who could say, you know, if they were successful women, you know, they would say, I know how to keep my man at home. And the old ladies used to say, she knows how to keep her man at home. And that's what they were talking about. Song of Solomon and Proverbs 31. When they said, she knows how to keep her man at home. Those were women that knew and understood male anatomy. They knew and understood sex. Those, in reality, ladies, were the real sex pots. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an education service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right here. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.